There is another picture of the organismic concept of the universe given to us in the 8th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita in 2 verses practically. Aksharam brahma paramam svabhavo dhyatmam uchyate bhuta bhavo bhavakaro visarga karma samajnyatah adhibhutam kshaaro bhavah purushascha adhidaivatam adhiyajno ahamevatra dehe dehe bhuradambara. These 2 verses of the Bhagavad Gita are very important cosmologically and from the point of view of an assistance to meditation. It is not easy for the mind to conceive of a total completeness. It has never been our habit to take anything completely. Everything is partially taken notice of. We move from one tidbit to another tidbit, and a holistic, complete view is something quite alien to the habit of the mind. Everything is to be taken partially. Something is grabbed and something is abandoned. Whenever you define any particular object of your conception, you have excluded at the same time other things which do not come under the purview or gamut of this description. As we have noted to some extent yesterday, meditation is not partial view of things. It is a complete picture that we have to present before our mind of the whole structure of creation. There is the Supreme Absolute, Aksharam Brahma, which is all in all. Imperishable Absolute is Aksharam Brahma. Then, we are also here. Whatever be our acquiescence in the finality of the nature of the Absolute Being, we also seem to be persisting together with it. I am there to conceive the Absolute. I want to reach it. I do meditation for attaining it. I persist together with my aspiration for that all-in-all Absolute. This persisting individuality is the swabhava or the nature of individuality as such, mankind as such, or anything for the matter of that. The self-assertion of a particular individual is the swabhava of that individual. It is natural for an individual to assert itself as a self-complete reality, wrongly of course, because no individual finite existence can be regarded as complete in itself. Yet each one of us regards one's own self as complete. So much so, this wrong notion of one's own being complete rises to such an extent that we become very arrogant, very proud of our strength. I am all in all, who is there before me? Let me see to it. Such kind of bragging is not uncommon among people who take the standpoint of this erroneous individuality, this finitude, which assumes the infinite arrogance of an all-comprehensiveness. However, we have to accept in the process of our analysis that there is an individual who is aspiring to unite itself with the Absolute, and that individual has its own constitutive nature that unavoidable constitutive nature of the individual is called Svabhava, natural disposition. Acharam Brahma Paramam Svabhavo Adhyatma Muchyate. Adhyatma here is the individual selfhood of mine or yours or anybody else's, which has its own characteristic self-assertive finality assumed by itself. Great contradiction this, of course, on the very surface of it, because on the one hand, this finitude, this individual aspires for the Absolute and accepts that the Absolute is all in all. And yet, at the same time, this me persists as that which seeks to unite itself with the Absolute. Who is going to unite itself with the Absolute when the Absolute is all in all? This question will not arise before this inveterate assertiveness of the individual, which somehow or other accepts the finality of the Absolute and also finality of one's own self. I have to be there in order that I may accept the nature of the Absolute. For the time being, tentatively, we may take for granted that there is this individual aspiring for the Absolute, whose nature is self-assertion in this manner. Svabhava adhyatma muchyate. Bhuta bhavod bhavakaro visarga karma samanjana. There is cosmological emanation of the evolution of the universe from this Absolute Brahman. The Supreme Absolute is what they call ontological being, being as such. From this being as such, which is what we call the Absolute Parabrahman, the universe is supposed to emanate. This process is cosmological, a gradual coming down from the universal transparency of completeness to a gradual particularization and condensation into objectivity of experience. The universal objectivizes itself in creation. The I becomes the thou. The subject becomes the object. In the earliest of stages, this subject becoming the object is not just identical with the psychological subject of an individual becoming empirically an object in cognition or sensory perception. The universal subject envisages itself as a universal object. Universal self-alienation may be the proper description of this condition, unthinkable though for us at this moment. What is the first evolute? Space, time and vibration. These are regarded as the first evolutes of the Supreme Being, which is in a different way given to us in the second book of the Taittiriya Upanishad. Tasmadva Atmana Akasha Sambhuta. From that universal selfhood of the Absolute, Akasha, the so-called emptiness before us, the vacuous presentation manifested itself. Akasha Vayu, the vibration set up in the constituent components of space became wind, air. The friction caused by air becomes heat. Vayu or Agni, the condensation of this heat becomes water. Agni Rapaha, the solidification of water becomes earth. Agya Prithvi. In this manner, gradual condensation takes place in the cosmological scheme of creation. So, absolute Aksharam Brahma, Brahma, then the individual Svabhava or the nature of self-assertiveness on the part of the aspiring consciousness, then the emanation of all the gradational evolutes to which we have already made reference in our study of the Sankhya categories and all those things 2 days back. Karma is the word used here in the Bhagavad Gita to designate this cosmic emanative process. It is not the work that is done by a person that is called karma here. It is the cosmic emergence of a force that disperses itself in all directions. Something like the Big Bang, what the modern scientists tell us, a sudden vibration, like the Bindu or the Nada of the Tantrics, and the split of the original vacuous apparent universality into a dual conception of the right and the left, the subjective side and the objective side, that which causes and that which is caused. This is the karma, philosophically conceived, as mentioned in this verse of the Bhagavad Gita. Isaranta karma samkhya, adhibhutam sarvabhavah. The entire objective universe is called adhibhuta. It is material in its nature. The material universe is called adhibhuta in the language of the Bhagavad Gita in this particular verse. Purushasthyadidhaivatam. There is a universal man gazing at all this process that is taking place, which we have in a most dramatic manner described in the Purusha Sutta of the Rig Veda. The great being, I am what I am, the one man, the cosmic man, the only man, superintends over all this process of creation in all manner, whatever it be. The supreme superintendence over this process of creation is done by the Absolute itself, putting on the role of the Purusha, as he is called. Adhiyajnohamevatra. Then there is a field of activity which is called yajna in Indian cultural parlance. In Indian cultural parlance, all activity is a sacrifice. This is something peculiar that we have to note in the study of Indian cultural heritage. Everything is sacrifice. Whatever be the work that you do, it is a sacrifice, because a part of you gets alienated in the performance of your work. What part of you gets alienated in what direction will be the subject of the 4th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, which is something very interesting and very detailed in its own way. What is the alienation that you are speaking of? What happens to you when you do work? Are you doing a sacrifice in doing work? There are 2 concepts of sacrifice. I have sacrificed a lot for this purpose. People sometimes say like that. by which they mean they have lost much of their legacy or heritage for some purpose. Do you know how much sacrifice they have done for this purpose? They feel they have lost something which would have been their belonging otherwise. But yajna, the true spiritual sacrifice, which is the connotation of work according to the Bhagavad Gita, is not a sacrifice of something that you would have liked to possess but now you are losing. In sacrifice you do not lose but you gain. Here is the difference between your ordinary concept of sacrifice and the Bhagavad Gita concept of sacrifice. I have sacrificed all my belongings to my children and my children have known nothing. I have come to the ashram here. Yes. Very great poor condition of the person. I have sacrificed everything for the country. Nobody cares for me now. I sacrificed my life for independence of India. Nobody bothers about me. Everything is a complete thought. You have done a lot of sacrifice, lost everything and got no recompense. This kind of sacrifice is no sacrifice. It is a tragedy of the very concept of the true nature of work. In actual spiritual sacrifice, you do not lose anything. What happens actually is, you create through this process of spiritual sacrifice an avenue for the entry of a larger universality into your own self, so that at every step of the sacrifice that you perform, you become bigger and bigger, larger and larger, more and more important and strong and large in your dimension. What you lose in sacrifice spiritually is the finitude of yourself. And you cannot say the loss of finitude is a loss, really speaking. It is like losing illness in the process of treatment of a disease. Oh, I have lost so much of my illness. I have lost. Do you complain like that? The gaining of health involves the loss of illness at the same time. But it is not really a loss. It is a loss of a defect in your personality, which is the disease, as you call it. So, in actual spiritual sacrifice, more and more of the finitude of your personality gets erased out, scrubbed off, and larger dimensions of the universal being are allowed to enter into you, so that in every act of sacrifice, you become more and more divine, more and more spiritual, more and more godly. The superintending principle over this entire arena of spiritual sacrifice, whole activity of the world, whatever it be, political, social, economic, including warfare, the whole thing is superintended over by some being. I am the superintending principle of all that, says this great being. A diversification of the absolute in all these ways takes place in the process of creation. Your own existence as an individual, the whole universe which has emanated from the absolute, your activity in this world, and the divinity that superintends over all your activities and even the processes of creation. These are the ramified forms of the performance of the single absolute, you may say. In this manner, conceive the total reality. When you open your eyes and look at the world, you are seeing Adibhuta. When you close your eyes and contemplate within, you are seeing Adhyatma. When you see the evolutionary process of the universe, you are seeing karma as an emanation of the universe from the absolute. When you see the great majestic mathematical precision of work in nature, everything is tip-top and fine and clean and neat, and nothing is out of order in this universe, that perfection that you see in this world process is God operating through all activity, inwardly as well as outwardly. Because of the presence of this universal God, the world looks beautiful. And you have a hope that one day or other you will be better. You will not curse yourself that you are going to be worse. Whatever be your present condition, you do not think that tomorrow you will be worse. Tomorrow I shall be better. Even the poor person, very meagerly receiving any income, suffering in the family, does not think that that will be the permanent state of affairs. And the presence of divinity in all things is the reason why we hope for better things. We do not even believe that we will be annihilated in death. Nobody thinks that we will be extinct. No, I will do many good things, I will be rewarded. If you are going to be extinct and completely annihilated in death, nobody will try to lift a finger. Why should you do any good thing in the world? Why should you do anything at all? Because tomorrow you are going to be annihilated. But something in you, the God present in you, the infinite present in you, the absolute present in you tells you are going to continue to exist even after the discarding of this body. And therefore, even when a person is about to die, he wants to do some good things, some charity. There is a need for doing charity, you are about to pass away from this world. Because you know that charity, the gift that you give, will be repaid to you in a future life. If the future life does not exist, the activities of this present life have no meaning. There is no ethics, no morality, and nothing that is of any kind of worth here if the futurity is abolished completely. That hope that you will be continuing in the future is because of the planting of God consciousness in yourself. So externally in Adhibhuta, internally in Adhideva, and in the process of creation, which is Visarga, Karma, and in the whole activity of Yajna, which is your duty that you perform, everywhere, in and out, top and bottom, you see God pervading everywhere. This is how you can bring a holistic concept before your meditation. Another way of the description of the organismic structure of the whole universe before you. Seven questions are raised by Arjuna in the beginning of the 8th chapter. And 6 questions are answered by these categories that I have mentioned. The other one is what happens when you depart from this world, to which a lengthy answer is given by Bhagavan Sri Krishna. The first 6, which are very important ontological principles, are just skipped immediately without any commentary. Just making mention of them only. But the phenomenon of dying takes a longer description. What happens when you pass away? Nothing happens to our solace and satisfaction. We may tell ourselves, actually nothing happens. Even if we die. What happens when you go to sleep and wake up in the morning? Do you grieve that you have slept? Because when you wake up, you will only continue the entire life process of the previous day. As I mentioned to you, that the continuance of life is guaranteed by your very hope of your activities being rewarded. And this continuance is not taking place in a haphazard manner. It is just like awakening from sleep. Whatever you have been thinking, whatever you have been doing in this world, will be carried forward as in a balance sheet of accounts in your next birth. What happens after death? Whatever you have done here, whatever you have thought and felt here, that will be carried forward. And where will you be reborn? You will be reborn only under those conditions where your unfulfilled work can find materialization. Just be guarded here in this matter. You must be very guarded. You will be reborn in that place under such conditions where you will be able to materialize your thoughts and feelings and the fruits of your actions of this present life. Is it not important therefore for you to go on keeping a diary of what you have done today? Can you just go scot-free as if everything is in your hand? I am the Lord of all things. Like King Canute saying, I am the Lord of the waves. Oh, stop the waves. But the waves would not stop like that. But most of us are callous about our own welfare. Carefree we are in our life. Do you know what you have done today will be the experience of your tomorrow? What have you done today? If you want a blessedness tomorrow, will you have thorns sown in the field of your life today? Today you sow the seeds of thorns and tomorrow you expect apples. No, apples will not come. You will see a vast area filled with thorns only in your future life. It is therefore very important for every one of you to keep a diary. What I am thinking? I have woken up in the morning. Now it is about past 10 o'clock. And what ideas occurred to my mind right from the time I woke up? Don't think this is a joke. This is a serious matter for you. You are the maker of your destiny. Nobody will reward you, nobody will punish you except yourself. Your thoughts and feelings will reward you. The whole universe works like a computer. It is not a friend or enemy of any person. As you feed it, so it will reward. Every day keep a note of what ideas, thoughts, feelings have arisen in your mind. They will fructify in your future. Sometimes it is said, as in the Bhagavad Gita, for instance, the last thought will determine the condition of yours in next birth. So you will be thinking wrongly like a foolish man. I can think a good thought when I am about to pass away. Now I shall do whatever I like. Don't be under this impression. The last thought is the butter that will come out of the milk of the whole life that you have lived for so many years. When you churn milk, butter comes up. Likewise, the so-called last thought during the passing from this world is not just one thought isolatedly standing there to take you to heaven or somewhere else. It is the energy sucked in a total fashion from all the thoughts and feelings that you entertained right from your birth onwards. So the last thought is not actually a last thought. It is a total thought of the whole life of yours. So the word last is not a proper description of the condition. It is not last. As we say, the fourth state of consciousness above waking, dream and sleep. It is not fourth numerically. It is a transcendent inclusiveness of the first three stages also. We must be very cautious. The words that we utter, the thoughts that we entertain and the feelings that we have in our hearts will punish us. Yamadanda is something that we hear of in the Puranas. The Lord of Death We stand there as a black man. This is what you hear in the Puranas and epics. This black man is nothing but your black thoughts. And the danda or the club that he holds to punish you is the reaction set up by your own evil thoughts. What are the evil thoughts? Any thought that is contrary to the universality of being is an evil thought. In this sense we may say, there will be no place in hell if all the people of the world are huddled up for getting their justice, because there is no one today in this world, you may imagine, who actually thinks and feels in harmony with the nature of things. There is a chaotic feeling and a cluster of confused ideas in the mind of people. We somehow drag on, what we say, we get on in life somehow or other. We are not living our life, we are dragging through it somehow, helplessly. You see, this is not the way of living. We should not drag our life, but live life. To live life will be to set our present condition of existence in harmony with the structure of the whole world as described in the six answers Bhagavan Sri Krishna gave to Arjuna's question, Atsaram Brahmavaram, etc. Whatever you think at the time of death that you belong, which is another way of saying, whatever be the essence of all the things that you thought in your mind and felt through your personality, they will be boiled at the time of death. The essence of all your feelings and thoughts throughout your life will come up to the surface, that is the last thought. And you will gravitate like a rocket to that atmosphere where your unfulfilled desires, your incomplete thoughts and feelings will condense, congeal into a solid personality which is called rebirth, being born once again in a physical formation of such a type, not any kind of type, but a specific type through which alone those actions and feelings of your earlier life can find a fulfillment. So you can be born anywhere, but you may wonder where I am going to be born, which place. You can find it out just now by the chart of your way of life today in this world. It is not difficult to know what will happen to you after death. You can know it today itself. What you are thinking today, that you will be doing in the next birth also. And a great detail of a description goes on in the 8th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita towards its end. The bright path of ascent and the smoky path of descent and all that. About which we need not bother much now. The Bhagavad Gita professor will go into details about this matter. We are concerned with meditation practically. These instances I am mentioning to you only to enable you to concentrate your mind in a proper manner, to muster in the energies of your personality, to conserve the vitality that usually gets depleted through the avenues of sense perception. Every moment you are an other than what you are. Every moment you are an other than what you are. You are an anatman every moment. Worst thing cannot be conceived. Whenever you cling to your object outside, brood over it and hug it, you have become other than what you are. Is there a greater tragedy conceivable than for oneself to become other than what one is? Abolition of oneself and becoming another is what is taking place in sensory perception and attachment to things emotionally. Here in the Bhagavad Gita, before you, wonderful textbook, everyone should read the Bhagavad Gita under a competent teacher and guide. Even if you read it many a time, you won't make much meaning out of it. You don't know what it is telling. Every time it seems to be telling different things. But if there is a competent guide for you, you will know that it is the quintessence of the cosmological descent and ascending process described in the Bhagavad Gita. The Supreme Being presented in all its variety for your meditation. This is the Bhagavad Gita. Everybody should read that with a very good commentary. I will register you certain commentaries on the Bhagavad Gita. One of them, which is easy to read, is Swami Jnaneshwar Maharaj's commentary. It's called Jnaneshwari's Gita. A simple, easy to understand commentary is written by Swami Shivanandji Maharaj. And there are larger commentaries like the one that we have published in the Gita Press. The founder of the Gita Press was one saintly man, a venerated person called Jayadayal Goenka. He wrote, he lectured a large commentary on each verse of the Bhagavad Gita. You can have it in Hindi as well as English in the Gita Bhavan. It is larger. Gita Jnaneshwari, Jayadayal Goenka, Swami Shivanandji Maharaj. Then there is the traditional commentary of the Acharyas, Shankaracharya, Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya. All these commentaries will create confusion in your mind. So take to one only according to your predilection, whether you are a devoted type or a psychic type or a rational type or an active type, as the case may be. An active type of people like Tilak's Gita, for instance. He emphasizes the nature of work as the final message of the Bhagavad Gita. And for whatever it is work, it is one aspect. However, I feel that the great message of life for you is the Bhagavad Gita, which is supposed to be the quintessence of the Upanishads, which are the quintessence of the Vedas. So the whole culture of India is in the Bhagavad Gita. All which is finally intended to enable you to live a total integrated life of non-sensuous completeness, never being a slave of your sense organs, desiring to see, desiring to hear, desiring to touch and desiring to eat, and desiring to smell, and all sense organs crave for their satisfaction. We go to picture house, clubs in the night and all that, only for the sake of the satisfaction of this malady created by the sense organs. Don't go to clubs and all that. Don't go to moving pictures. These are very wretched. All horrible things are only projected even in Doordarshan and all that. Nothing is worthwhile. It is a waste of time and spoiling your career entirely also. So study the Bhagavad Gita, Upanishads, and be under a good guide. Every one of you should have a good guide. You may consider that person as a guru if you like. If you do not use that big word like guru, at least some kind of referee. If you have any difficulty, you make a reference to that person. You have a referee, a mentor, a teacher, whoever it is. Find out somebody. Among so many people you have seen in the world, somebody must have impressed you very much. And be friendly with that person. And until you find a better one, under the dispensation of God Himself, you will find everything will be alright for you. It is therefore necessary in everyday life of ours that we should be in harmony with nature, harmony with God who created nature, harmony with people around in society, harmony with all created beings. Samatvam yoga uchyate. The last word of the Gita is harmony is yoga. A setting up of equilibrium in your personality in respect of society outside, nature in front of you and God above, that kind of harmony simultaneously introduce into your personality is the process of the cosmic awakening of your individuality, so called. So goes the Bhagavad Gita for you, and I will not go further today. Hari Om Tat Sat. Bhagavan Ki Jai.